Stan, take us through this process here. Thousands of years ago, an author or a series of authors then put together the letters, the information that became the Hebrew text of Genesis. How did that come to us at this point? I mean, was this handed down? Did somebody rewrite it?
Well, if two different mathematicians were to calculate pi, they get exactly the same result because they know the principle that generates that special transcendental number. I'm saying that the text of Genesis is a woven structure recording embryology at all levels, whether it's the basket weaving of planetary motion in the sky or the basket weaving of a womb that produces an egg that turns into a fetus. That the embryology of civilization, the embryology of cosmology, the embryology of human life always follows the same sequence, and that it could have been recalculated. It also would be something else. The archetypal checksum, the place where it all comes together, is attributed to Moses. In that, here is a point. Let me actually back it up. Let's say you had a spiritual experience,
okay,
and you were profoundly changed, and you wanted others to have this great experience also. How could you lend it to others? How could you teach others about it?
Well, one of the ways, I'd start writing it down.
But who would believe you? How would they wouldn't experience from what you wrote.
No. They'd know the story, and then they'd say, I believe it, I don't.
I'm saying it's more than that. I'm saying that if you want to experience the dance, go to Arthur Murray's dance studios in the 50s and step into the footprints painted on the ballroom floor and learn to do the, God help us, the cha-cha. That, in fact, what Moses did was to have this experience. And he recorded the footsteps metaphorically up and down the sacred mountain. That's why he's barefoot. That this is experience that's been recorded. It's also, it turns out, checkable at the abstract level. It's multidimensional. It's the same model, but at every possible level. So it projects onto human experience at the time of Moses. It becomes precise at that point. But in fact, it's part of perennial tradition. It's just shattered. It's not all in one place. It's broken up. It's scattered. Good and bad are mixed together. And at each point of rebirth, it's a new child. It's corrected. It starts fresh again. A living thing has the ability to regenerate itself. If the Torah text is a living text in the real sense of the word, not just a throwaway metaphor, then it has to be error-correcting. It has to decompress itself. It has to have all of the qualities that we would talk about now in preserving information. And I'm saying that's exactly what we have here, that this is real and intrinsic to reality as any other revelation. Like, and I'm saying the number pi is a revelation. It's intrinsic. You can't change it. You can calculate it to any accuracy you want.
But, I mean, physically, who carried the Hebrew Bible down through the ages?
Well, from Moses until, the rabbinic tradition, the Mosaic tradition, carried it from Moses to David to Solomon through the kings of Israel and Judah until the Babylonian exile. And at that point, there was a retrenchment, a review of everything. It wasn't until the time until after the Babylonian exile that the Bible stories became stories. The way the Torah was read to the public before then was as a kind of they call it targums. They were like stories about the stories, giving people a sense of what this was about,
mm-hmm.
but not attempting to make a story translation. It was only when Ptolemy Philadelphus ordered the rabbis of the Sanhedrin to produce a Greek translation for the Alexandrian Library that we have any idea of a story in modern language. And in fact, the rabbinic tradition holds that order to make a story translation for Ptolemy was the worst tragedy that ever occurred. It was worse than the golden calf for the simple reason that from that point on, the majority of people hearing about the biblical text would think it was nothing but the stories.
So it was distorted, you think?
Not distorted. No, actually, distorted is the wrong word. Everything I'm proposing has two components, an inside and an outside, a flame and a vessel. if you have a light, a flame, and you don't put it in the lantern, it's either going to blow out or burn down the barn. You need to put a light in its appropriate lantern.
Right.
In a living system, if you have the germ of an oak tree on the ground, it's going to desiccate. It'll die. It needs its acorn, which grows from the information in the germ. So this vessel, these stories, are projected, are grown directly from the abstract level. They are one-to-one corresponding with each other. The basic first model, before I knew that we were looking at a model hand that generated the letters, the first model I came up with, I called the light in the meeting tent. It was based on the first word of the Hebrew text of Genesis, which is usually translated in the beginning. That word has two parts to it internally. One part says fire, and the other part says sixth thorn. And I took the sixth thorn to be a tetrahedron, which has six edges and looks like a thorn. And I took the fire to be a little spiral vortex, which later turned out to be this model hand shape. And so I put the spiral vortex flame in the tetrahedral meeting tent. And when I looked through the different sides of the tent, I saw outlines of different Hebrew letters. And that wasn't enough, but it gave me a vessel, a tent, a tetrahedron, to put the light inside of. The letter sequences in Torah are the light in Torah. The stories are the vessel. If it weren't for the biblical stories, the Torah text would have been lost during times of persecution. If it was only known in its deep magical, mystical, spiritual, philosophical level by a few leaders, prophets and kings and scientists and scholars, then whenever the generic Inquisition rolled through, they always kill off the leadership. So in order for an acorn, in order for the germ of an oak tree to survive bad times, it has to have an acorn. In order for the light in Torah to survive through the ages, it has to have a vessel of stories and a community of people who live out the stories.